Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Hello, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Tonight we are finishing our interview with Sunshine Astar. This will represent part two of the interview, and I think you're going to find it to be very, very interesting. So as they say, hold tight, and here we go.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Sunshine, again, and welcome back to the show.
Hi, Kelly. It's great to be here. I'm so excited for part two today.
Yes, part two is going to be as good as part one. So here we go. I thought that we would spend our hour today talking about some of the interesting aspects that you do in your life. And Sunshine does a lot of different types of work. And so I wanted to break this down, and we'll move into some of these types of things as we go along here. But Sunshine, why don't you first start to tell us a little bit about how you fell into the paranormal or paranormal investigating, and if you've had any interesting cases that you can share with us.
Oh, sure. So paranormal investigation is something I've always done as well. Like, not always, not since I was two, like seeing spirits and talking to spirits. However, when it came time to begin to clear houses and people of negative entities or energies, I started to want to know a little bit more about what I was getting myself into so that I could address the entity properly. Example: if I have a mad Native American in somebody's house, I can't really ask Jesus to take them to the light. It's not going to work for the Native American, right? So I like to do my research before I go clear a space. And that kind of morphed into paranormal investigation. And so I will go to a location when someone calls me. I've got something going on, my child is up at night, or I feel like I'm being pinned down and I can't get out of bed, or I actually see a shadow person. I will say, okay, we're going to come over. Usually it's me and my husband, Jason, because he's my bodyguard in this now. I don't like to go to people's houses alone anymore. I'm not that brave as I used to be when I was younger. And we'll do a little investigation where we will use a spirit box, we'll use dowsing rods, EMF detectors, REM pods, which is a device in which an energy can come near it and let light off a bell, or lights will go off on it. So we kind of, I can't remember the very first one I've ever done, to be honest. But I did an interesting case yesterday where there was a woman who has been dealing with a lot of energies in her house, where especially her bedroom, where she felt she was being pinned down. She felt afraid to sleep in her bedroom. She moved into the living room and wouldn't sleep in her bedroom. She had two cats at that time, and the cats would really act up. And she would send me pictures of orbs and some EVPs and things like that. So I went to her place to investigate. This one was just yesterday, so it's very fresh in my mind. And I got just a little bit on the spirit box, a little bit with dowsing. I was able to get the names of some people. I was able to figure out what had happened to the people on the land. And mostly, I was able to find that stuff in the basement. And then directly outside of the basement, I was walking with my dowsing rods. And when they crossed, I was like, I'll stop here and I'll ask some questions. Okay. And I found the name of a colonial person who was killed, and he claims by savages. So it's a very cumbersome process to use the dowsing rods to get the words. But what I actually do is I will say, spin my right rod, A equals one, B equals two, and then I'll have someone else kind of writing down each letter. Yesterday, I got the name of someone named Kane Rose, who is not anywhere in the history of the location at all. But I was able to find a Rose family in England that maybe some of them came to this area of Connecticut. But the only way I could really corroborate that for sure would be to go to the Historical Society, look up a ship's manifest and find out. But his story was that he was very angry. He told me 20 other people, including children, were killed by savages. And that it was in the 1600s. So this had to be early colonial settlers. And that was the exact vibe I had gotten when I got to the house. I mean, sometimes people die in the 1970s and become ghosts, right?
Right.
And it's a whole different vibe than a colonial ghost. I was hoping for a colonial ghost, of course, because I don't know. I enjoy that time period. I don't know why anyone in their right mind ever came to America. During that time, it must have been really rough in England to come here and try to carve out a living where everything is literally against you. So the location of the home was right on a river and in between a lake and a river, which was definitely prized land at that time. And it turned out that the land, when I went to the Historical Society, was a place when they were doing the excavation for this complex and the different buildings there, they took out trunks of Native American artifacts. So I feel it was a battleground, and that's what the Native Americans confirmed via dowsing rods for me, my spirit rods, I call them. Honestly, I would love to use the Ouija board because it must be faster. However, there's a whole bunch of other issues that go along with Ouija boards. It's kind of like opens a gateway. What I learned was that the person who had called me to her house is a medium herself and isn't realizing it. So her house was like Grand Central Station as far as entities that want to try to go to the light or they want help. They're coming to her location, talking to her, messing with her things, and not going to the light because she wasn't aware that she could do that. So part of what I was doing with her yesterday was educating her about herself. And then I'm going to, when I go to actually clear her location, instead of just investigate it, I'm going to teach her how to do it in my method because she can pay it forward and help other people. I look at it this way. If I was a lost colonial ghost or any ghost, looking for help for 400 years, I certainly would make a lot of noise as well. And it helps, I think, to educate the homeowner that they're not dealing with something that's demonic. Demons are rare. Gonna just say that. I said what I said. Mm-hmm. Demons are rare. However, angry ghosts, we've got lots of those. Mm-hmm. And I feel that just by me going there, educating her a little bit how to talk to them, because she had given an offering to the Native Americans, but she's mostly being haunted by this dead colonial family mm-hmm. who are very angry about any offerings to the Native Americans. So it's a whole bunch of nuances that kind of go together.
Well, and Sunshine, you bring up a really good point here, something that people don't usually think about very often. And I was kind of thinking about this the other day myself. So we're dealing with a spirit family or individuals from a spirit family now that continue to reside on a property that they felt was theirs back in the day, which was what, 400, 500, 600 or whatever years ago. That's a long time to hang around a property. Would you say that the interactions that you were having with this ghost family was intelligent and not necessarily residual?
Oh, so intelligent. It was really pretty cool because on the spirit box session, they were able to tell me how they died. There were giggling of kids, basically. My thoughts here were that his family didn't really know where they were going to go when they died. Predestination was very popular until the 1770s, I think, mm-hmm. until the Great Awakening happened here in America, where people realized you didn't have to buy your way to heaven. Yeah. You could pray, you could do good deeds. In previous to that, you would be told you're born to either go to heaven or hell. So I think that's a factor in it. And in fact, even the gravestones in this area and in England as well, from that time period, will have a scary skull mm-hmm. on their tombstone. Mm-hmm. And the reason they have that there is to scare anything that's negative to follow them into heaven. As you move into the 1700s, those faces change from scary skeletons into angels or more helpful looking beings or willow leaves, something more sweet. And so I feel that one, it may have been predestination issues. Mm-hmm. Number two, the feeling I got was that it was a big surprise to the family mm-hmm. that they were not expecting to be descended upon and murdered, you know. And the Native Americans, they still maintain their innocence. This is our land. They didn't have a decree from our chief that said they could live there. Maybe from their chief, but not from ours, you know. And even though often we will hear Native Americans won't kill women or children, that's simply a nice thing to say. It's not really the truth. Yeah. It's not the truth. I've encountered so many different spirits that have been murdered and in the Native Americans' eyes, justly. So we've got two things going on at the same time. And then we have the lady who's a medium who's just attracting more and more of them. The beacon. I called her place Grand Central Station. And I said, you've got, you're like a big light that they're all coming to. So, you know, I feel that the intelligent ones, the intelligent beings there are this family, and that the children, they still like to play with things. They'll play with bubbles. They'll bounce a ball. They'll giggle and you'll hear footsteps. And then, you know, whatever else is on the land there may not really like her very much. You know, I did find out that she's part Cherokee. And so that speaks to why the Native Americans aren't really haunting her as much, mm-hmm. but the family is just kind of stuck halfway in her yard and halfway in the basement. it's really interesting because when I'm in the basement, it occurred to me I'm getting really good readings here because I'm actually underground and I'm closer to their where they are at or where their dust is located at this point.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was going to ask, very fascinating. Did you go to the, is this family buried right there? Or did you go to a cemetery where they are buried, or do they not technically have any gravestones to find?
No gravestones to find. No real, I couldn't find them in history. Usually I can find someone that at least has a grave in a colonial graveyard. Mm-hmm. I feel that these folks were here in the very early 1600s, maybe, you know, 1630 or 1627 was where I was kind of heading, somewhere between that time. And so the only way to verify they ever really lived there would be through a ship's manifest. I've had other examples of clearing entities where I could definitely find the people in history. Mm-hmm. This is one that I did about 3 weeks ago. I don't know if I told you about it yet or not. Mm-hmm. It was a home where an 18-month-old baby was getting scratched and awakened at night. And his, he could talk a little bit. So I said, to him, who is doing it? Who is it? And he said, the mean girl.
Huh.
And I said, okay. And I said, so what does she do? Because I like to interview everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, he just went like this. Like she bites her yeah. finger on him and makes her eyes big. Yeah. And that scared him. So the mother of the house called me in on this case. And it was, it used to be a homestead belonging to some of the founding fathers of Stonington, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So I was able to look it all up. When I was there, I hadn't done very much looking into the history yet. I just wanted to go interview people. Mm-hmm. My spirit rods, when I said, who is here? My spirit rods spelled out the name Zebulon.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, sure. Like, you're totally screwing with me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never heard this name Zebulon. Are you trying to be an alien? Are you being a trickster? Weirdly, I went outside to give my offerings to the Native Americans. And whose grave did I find in the cornfield? Zebulon Brown.
Wow.
There it was. And I went, holy crap.
Yeah.
So then I went back and I went to the Historical Society and I asked them lots of questions. And I found out that that property had been handed down to someone named Thomas Minor.
Okay.
And there's a discrepancy from England, whether it's an E or an O. And there's actually a little write-up in the Historical Society about that name being E or O, and I think it's called What's in a Name.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the mean girl had been one set of twins. She passed away. Her name was Deborah Minor, and she passed away when she was about 8 years old, and her other twin lived and went on to marry and everything. Well, the mean girl, little Deborah Minor, told me that she was left behind. And what had happened was that her body was not moved into the family plot when everybody else was. So she was really sad, lonely, angry, and desperately wanted to be with a mother. Mm. So what she was doing was trying to get into the little boy, which is not allowed. I was like, you can't do that. And I was able to get her to go to the light pretty easily because I showed her where her family was. And I said, this is heaven. And she went right away. So that was a case where I could definitely trace it back to who it was and able to say, you know, these are the people and the spirits and ghosts that are haunting this location, and with good reason. So there's not much I can do to, you know, move her body. She had been buried in the basement of the home, which often people did that. And she just never got moved to the local cemetery where she was supposed to be. So she was angry.
Question about that. Very fascinating. I have a couple questions. I have questions popping up, but I don't want to interrupt you when you're very, very cool. First question. Okay. The gal that was buried in the basement of the house. Are you talking about the gal that was attacking the 1.5-year-old child? Is that the one you're referring to? I had no idea that people buried, I suppose, depending on where you're at or what they did back then, I had no idea people buried individuals probably as a ritual or whatever. Why do you think they did that? Why do you think they buried people in their basement rather than in a cemetery?
Well, number one, in the colonial times, we didn't have set aside land for cemeteries yet. Okay. And if the child died in the wintertime, the ground outside would be hard to dig in.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they would store a body someplace where it would be cool and chilly. But the real reason, this was the real reason that I felt that the child had been buried in the basement, was because at that time in Connecticut, we had wolves.
Oh.
We had lots of wolves. And there wasn't really a way to prevent the wolves from digging you up unless you were buried in a graveyard and you had a big, I call it a capstone, mm-hmm. that would go on top of to prevent that from happening. So no one wants to see their dead loved one ripped apart by wolves. And I felt a lot of sadness coming from the family that this girl had passed. And so I think in some ways it was a way of keeping her near. And in other ways, it may have just been practicality. I mean, it may have just been that they couldn't bury her outside. There is a small family cemetery outside, as I spoke about, in the cornfield. Yet, I don't know that there's any bodies there. It might just be the markers. Because there was a time when people started to just move all dead bodies into a cemetery location. But I think this one had more to do with sentimentality from the mother, mm-hmm. and from the fact that the wolves were wild animals could come in and take your loved one away.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's a one of my relatives or a part of my line. You're just bringing up a good thought here for me. I know that there was an existing cemetery not too far from their house, but they buried their, I don't know if it was a girl or a boy, I thought it was a girl, baby child, in their front yard of their home where they were at. Now, I have no idea why they did that. I don't know if it had anything to do with secrecy. I have nothing, or if it had anything to do with money, or just, I mean, who knows what the reason was as to, because I know that that this child that they had, I don't know what happened there, but could have been buried in a cemetery easy enough because they weren't that far away from one. But people have all kinds of reasons sometimes for what they do. And that's very fascinating, because that practicality of the wolves and being dug up, you know, how horrifying to go to maybe, and then you find this big dug up hole and in there, that they will scratch and they will dig deep just to get whatever they're going after. If they're hungry enough or they think it's a food source or whatever their issue is. That's fascinating. The other question I was going to ask you regarding when you go and do investigations, are you with I'm going to use this medium person as a great example here, because you've just kind of woke me up to something that I probably haven't been aware of myself. I could never figure out how I was able to constantly haunt these homes that I was in, nice ones, mean ones, whatever. And I always refer to myself as a beacon anyway, because wherever I am, here they come, kind of thing. Yes. They always want to hang out with me or something. But Are you usually with the homeowner, in this particular case, the person who was a medium, and do you think that it helps you or together with your abilities that they strengthen, or do you find that a little hindering when and you would rather just kind of say, go somewhere, I would like to just do this myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it honestly, either way, it doesn't seem to bother me. You know, like if the homeowner wants to watch what I'm doing, I absolutely don't mind. In this case, with the woman who is a medium and really didn't understand what she was doing, or who she is, that she is that beacon, as you spoke about, like, I was like, even if you move from here, you're still going to have ghosts. Like, so don't think moving is the answer. What I found was that she was pretty helpful. Yeah. And yet also, like, ghost investigations, you have to be very quiet. So you have to be very, very quiet. A lot of times it's really boring. You can sit for an hour and get nothing. And then all of a sudden somebody decides to speak up. But what I found was that she knew different ways already of drawing them out. So in this case, it was pretty helpful because once I set the date that I was coming to her home, everything started to act up a lot more, which is always the way. They'll act up. They'll start bothering you more. They'll talk more. They'll throw things around more. And sometimes when I show up, it's like, we're hiding from you. We're going to hide from sunshine. We're not going to let her know we're here. And this particular woman started to blow bubbles and it drew out the children. So that was helpful. You know, it really depends on the case. But what I always, always need is more quiet time. And I'm always like, not to be rude, but you need to be quiet now. Okay, we're going to be quiet for 6 minutes, you know, and then I'll let a recording run or I'll sense what's going on. It really depends on the comfort level of the homeowner. If the homeowner is really terrified, I will send them out. I'll say, you don't need to be here for this. You know, I'll record it if you want, whatever they want. But you don't have to be here. If somebody's really scared, you know, I'll be like, you don't have to be here for this part. If someone's curious and they also want to know what's going on, then I let them participate. I'll give them some dowsing rods or a EMF detector. I wanted to say K-12, but I don't know if that's the right word. You know, give them something to kind of play with the spirits a bit, and that's kind of fun too. Lately, I've been doing more filmed investigations. Last year, I worked with a filmmaker, and we did a really cool documentary that should be coming out this October. Fingers crossed. And it's, you know, we didn't get a whole lot. Sometimes people think they're living in a super haunted house because they have a few occurrences of things. And yet it might not be as haunted as, you know, when I get there, I'm like, it's just not that haunted, not as haunted as Mystic or not as haunted as, you know, other locations where I'll say only one ghost here, you know, and I get disappointed. So that particular investigation last year had come from the filmmaker listening to a podcast about a really haunted house. Mm-hmm. And it was really dramatized. And I'm not saying that it's not haunted. I'm just saying it's not poltergeist haunted. Mm-hmm. It's not the way I thought I was going to go into this. Like, I like to run into the burning building. Let's just say the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to go into a location where people are literally scared to death to go back into a house, or something has physically happened, or things are breaking. That excites me. When I go in and it's just one ghost just knocking about, I'm always like, oh, well, this is an easy day. All right. You know, so I like it to be more active than not active. Mm-hmm. This one was like, you know, medium active. Just she was calling things in without realizing it.
Interesting. Question for you regarding going into a house that's very active. Have you ever had any apparition or mean-spirited apparition attempt to trip you down the stairs, throw you down the stairs, airlift you, all kinds of things? Have you ever been in that situation before? And then if you have, hopefully you haven't weren't hurt, but how do you react to something like that?
Oh, okay. So I can tell you about a case in New Jersey. This was in Washington, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The house was a big Victorian type looking house. It used to be a Western Union boarding house, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Like, so each room pretty much had its own bathroom. It was a three-level home, four if you count the basement. And that place had so many different entities in it that it was hard to distinguish which one was doing what at first. Mm-hmm. I had a lady on the top floor who had, now this is a ghost lady, not a real lady, a ghost lady who would appear in a red dress. Mm-hmm. And she was always wearing high heels. Mm-hmm. So if I was in a downstairs room, mm-hmm. and I wasn't up in, quote, my bedroom, mm-hmm. I could hear the clicking of high heels walking. Mm-hmm. And then I would know she was there. If I brought anyone home with me physically, you know, romantically, she would, I don't know how to say it, but try to seduce the person I brought home,
yeah.
and try to keep me out of the room.
Yeah.
So she pushed me down the steps, I would say 3 or 4 times. And it was a shove, a real just like, mm-hmm. you're going down, girl. This guy's for me, mm-hmm. kind of situation. And I could feel the energy. But when it happened, I was surprised with how forceful. Yeah. She was, yeah. because I was taken aback by it, as is my way. I'm always, I don't necessarily underestimate things, but yeah. sometimes I'm surprised. So she pushed me down the steps about 3 times, on 3 different occasions. So I started to hold on to the handrail.
Right. Yeah.
When I would go down or up the steps, she really was pretty strong. She didn't really want to go to the light when it was time. But that was based on the fact that she had also been a prostitute, mm-hmm. as well as someone working for Western Union. Mm-hmm. So her Catholic ideas, even after death, were still with her. Mm-hmm. And she thought she wouldn't go to heaven because of her sins against mm-hmm. God. Mm-hmm. So I had to let her know that, you know, Jesus forgives everyone, and you are definitely a child of the light, even though you're pushing me down the steps. What was going on with her was that I don't think she realized that she wasn't still a human living in my time. Mm-hmm. In that same exact house, there was another spirit of a woman whose name was Christy. And she would prey upon any children that would come into the home. She was a little girl when she died, but she'd been dead again, maybe a long time, like 300 years, something like this. And she seemed to always want to have a playmate. So if there were children in the house and they were living in that room, mm-hmm. the children would tell me that some little girl said to them to jump off the balcony.
Oh, God.
Could have a sister, and it would always mostly be the little girls that she would want. That she would say, "You can be with me forever." What that little girl really looked like as a ghost was a grown-up woman with, you know, bright red hair. So she had the ability to make herself look sweet and innocent, and then also very. She was, I would definitely call her a poltergeist.
Yeah,
but she was a very malevolent spirit who wanted company, mm-hmm. and who wanted people to continue to die in that house. Mm-hmm. That was a little scary to me because one of the children that lived there and lived in the room in which she had lived was a perfectly healthy child when they moved in. Mm-hmm. And after 3 months, they became suicidal. They were cutting themselves, drawing really crazy pictures. And when I interviewed them, they were the one that told me that the little girl really wasn't just a little girl. And I was like, okay. You know, so that kind of situation, that, you know, you can't really do too much except send them to the light, mm-hmm. and ask for the help of the divine beings to do it, because they're unwilling to go. They're perfectly happy being grumpy. They were probably grumpy in life and they're grumpy after death, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think I saw something on TV, and I'm talking years ago, where you brought up this illustration with the little girl jump over the balcony, you know, be with me, you know, we'll play forever, whatever. And of course, I do recall something like that. And even then, it made me shiver. And then but I think they made that out on that television show to be more of a demonic type of entity, something that also shape-shifted into mm-hmm. something of the sort of a bull or something like that, like a, you know, not a cow, a bull, and just mm-hmm. that would walk on its you know, hooves or whatever, mm-hmm. and yeah, it would scare the bejesus out of people. And then it'd have these footprints up in the attic of this thing. And so this family, they didn't, are they still there? Did they move, or did they decide to try and wait this out? What happened with that family?
The family left the location. They yeah. were too afraid. They just yeah. got really afraid when their daughter was getting so depressed. And when they left the house, they felt much better. Mm-hmm. That entity stayed in that house. It didn't yep. follow them.
Yep.
And the owner of the house didn't want me to get rid of any of the ghosts.
Oh.
But that person has passed away, and I did physically get rid of the one named Christy way before I was given real permission to do it, because mm-hmm. I felt it was very detrimental. It wasn't helping anybody.
Yeah.
It wasn't helping her. It wasn't helping anybody that moved in, and I just did it. And then the homeowner did say to me, haven't really seen Christy around. And I was like, oh, well, you know, mm-hmm. she has her little cycles. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And just kind of said, you've got lots of other ghosts in the house to focus on, you know.
I wonder why this owner didn't want you to get rid of any of these ghosts. Was he advertising the place as like a bed and breakfast that was haunted and attracted people there? Or what was his or her reasoning for not wanting you to try to rid some of this stuff?
Well, when you own and live in a haunted house for a long time, mm-hmm. it's kind of the same thing as if you're in a dysfunctional family and you don't realize it until someone points it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that he was being directly affected mm-hmm. by the house, by the entities, and I think that a lot of times the entities were speaking through him without him realizing it.
Yep.
You know, just really, a haunted house doesn't always just immediately let itself be known. Sometimes it kind of creeps in on you. And oftentimes, the person in the haunted house will become ill or become very reclusive. Mm-hmm. And that was the case in this house. The gentleman became very reclusive, got very sick, stayed sick, and certainly didn't want me to come and get rid of anything at all.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I did get rid of the one. I had to.
I just find that fascinating and brave of you for putting yourself into kind of the limelight of trying to rid some of this stuff, because people have been thrown up against walls and you know, thrown down the stairs and pushed down the stairs and all kinds of things happening. And yeah, that's very interesting. Let's move this into a new topic now, because I think that that was very fascinating. I want to delve into a little bit about how this kind of also then turned in for you for true crime, because you're probably the first person that I've talked to on all of my shows, and I've got quite a few of them, that has had some firsthand experience with missing persons or involving true crime. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so there's one case I think that I want to highlight because it used all of my skills at one time. This was a case in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I was living in Monroe, Connecticut at the time. And being a medium, a beacon, sometimes ghosts show up, right? And we don't always know what do they want. Well, I had a ghost of a woman show up, and she looked pretty bad. She was pretty bloody, I want to say. A little torn up in the torso. Not well at all. And she looked bad. And she started to hang around my home, literally. And finally, I started to communicate with her. I started, because sometimes they'll come in, I'll send them to the light, they go. This one was like kind of hanging around, like it wanted something from me. And so I did a formal spirit session. I didn't have a spirit box. I was just doing my own medium work, communicating with this woman. And she was claiming that she had been murdered and she wanted me to find the murderers. And I was like, okay, well, what's like my first, you know, clue here? And should I get involved? You know, will the police be upset with me if I'm involved? That's always my first question, right? When I'm doing a case that's, you know, this was a death and dismemberment case. So it was really wild. And she showed me mentally who had been the cause of this. And so it was so strange. She showed me the person's face, but I did not know who it was. Then the other piece of information she gave me was weird. It was Tom Thumb saw everything. And I was like, what does that mean? I have no idea what this means. I saw the person. I kind of could draw a picture of the person. And then I was really thinking about the Tom Thumb thing. I'm like, what does that mean? Why would she say that? And who is Tom Thumb? Yeah. Right. So at that time, I went to the library because it wasn't, you know, a real Google time. We didn't have smartphones the way we have them now. 100%. We did have them, but not, I don't know. I don't feel it was something I could really look up on my smartphone or figure it out that way. So I went to the library and, you know, Googled Tom Thumb. And it was weird. I found something out that I did not know, that Barnum and Bailey Circus used to spend time in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So I further found out that Tom Thumb's grave was in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So then I went to Tom Thumb's grave. And I looked up at his monument and I followed the direction in which his eyes were going. And sure enough, that's where part of her body was. In the marsh there. At that time, I contacted the police and I said, I may have some information on a case. I'll just give you what I know. I don't know if it will help or not help. I don't know if it means anything at all. But I worked with three different detectives. I was only supposed to work with one detective. I was really nervous when three came, because then it's always a question with the police. How do you know this?
Right.
Are you involved in this?
Right.
That's the scariest part. Because I knew details that no one could have known. But they did the search and there they found her part of her body, which did have a ripped up torso. So that was a case in which I was able to help them solve the case, but I got absolutely no credit for it.
You know, I bring this up on my show periodically, and I do. I've worked in law for about 8 years, and I had done some undercover work, which was very, I thought it was interesting, but it can be dangerous. But yes, the one thing that we talked about often, and like in the beginning of my courses from an attorney to us as students, was when psychics end up getting involved, or somebody ends up getting involved, or they get this information, or maybe they've had a dream or a vision or a premonition or anything of that sort, and they go to the police and they say, I think I know how to help you find this person or whatever, they're the first person that they look at rather than anything else, because they know, they seem to appear to know too much information. And yes, so I've always wondered how difficult it is to be a psychic, especially someone who is being brought messages from the other side, or someone that has targeted you to try to help solve their case, and what that's met with. Now, I'm just going to take a hunch here that your local police department may know of you well enough now, where if you do have information, they may not look at you like, you know, you're just someone from off the street. How are you treated now, since you are maybe perhaps a little bit more known in this respect? How are you treated?
Well, in my local town, definitely if there was something they wanted my help with, I would help them. I haven't been asked in my local town of Mystic, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We also don't have a whole lot of crime here.
Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, but there have been other cases where that were in other states, mm-hmm, and I would call with information and not met with very good vibes. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. One woman that I called a detective to give a pointer on a case that's actually still ongoing. And I was told, you know, that's not our case. You have to call the town that's involved. And like, but I think the body is in your town, so why don't you guys go look for it? Right. And I was pushed back to another state. When I called the other state, I was met with, look, we're not trying to discount your abilities. I said, I don't really care if you believe in me or not. I'm literally just passing on information that's come from the other side, because the dead person came to me and told me, and nothing happened. Sometimes I think it's a case of the police are not really, maybe there's been a botch between two departments. Maybe there's a botch between, you know, if it's the child involved, maybe there's multiple agencies that have screwed up a situation and nobody really wants to take responsibility. That's what I run up against more than anything. But when someone says they doubt my abilities, I just say, that's okay. You can doubt them all day long. I'm just trying to give you a tip. And if you take it, you might find something. In this particular case, I was asked, well, how do you know that this person is dead? And I said, because they came to me and spoke to me. And I videotaped that session, that spirit session. I said, I've got it on video. If you want me to send it to you, I'm happy to. They've confirmed a particular address via dowsing 5 times in a row. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen if I've got a trickster. It doesn't happen if it's not the truth. And in this particular case, I don't think the police are interested in what I have to say. And that's okay.
Sometimes too, which is part of all of this, and I've tried to explain it in the best way that I know how. So if anyone's listening to this and I'm wrong, well, I'm only going off of information that I learned of years ago, and I kind of stick to it. Protocol, I want to talk a little bit here about protocol, because if you go into like a lawyer's office, they have the way they're trained to look at things. They have we have a protocol. I'm not a lawyer. I was a paralegal, litigation paralegal, with some undercover responsibilities or duties when they asked me to go out and spy on people. Okay. Now, I have to say that I don't do this anymore. So I got out of law and then became, and then became a college professor. And I don't know which one was worse. But anyway, which would you rather have, to be the college professor or the undercover person? But one of the things too that I learned is, like, for example, and I'm not sure of this, but maybe like the fire department, they have a protocol. The police, they have a protocol. The way doctors think, they have a protocol. Everybody has a way of training by which they think. And then you have now you have people disagreeing with each other because of the way they do their protocols. And so if you want to put your finger on something here, it is not like they might not believe you and everything, but then it's kind of like, well, who's going to take this one? Well, it's out of our jurisdiction. You brought up a very valid point here. Buried in your town, but supposedly murdered maybe in a different county or town. All right, so who gets to take that one? Is it the one who, oh no, well, if they're buried in their town, that's their jurisdiction. If they're buried or if they're killed in your town, well, that's your deal. And then they only go as far as they can go. It's really interesting with the way the world works. And I do know for a fact, though, that there are police departments and detectives that do rely very heavily on psychic abilities, especially those that they know very well, or someone if they're willing to take a tip from somebody, and then they take all the credit for it, of course. Yeah, look at, we found so-and-so. Oh my God, it's a miracle. Wow. Look, yeah. And usually a lot of times it was a psychic that led them right to the very area that, and I'm not saying this happens in all cases, so don't send me hate mail. But the thing is that this is very true. We're talking about jurisdiction protocol, we're talking about the way people are. If they start giving credit to a psychic for helping them find somebody that's been gone for quite a while, all of a sudden they don't want to say, oh, you can't do your job on your own, you need a psychic to help you do your job. There was a case just recently, and this is kind of unrelated a little bit, but it serves another point here, and I thought it was very interesting. I was just reading something on Facebook, and it was about something that happened yesterday, maybe over in the Salt Lake City area, where they thought that maybe a meteor or something, or possibly a UFO, hit into a mountain or something around that area. And it was a very big boom, and everybody kind of heard that and whatever. But what was really interesting about this article was that towards the end of it, or towards it some way, it said, yeah, well, I guess we'll find out as soon as a hiker stumbles across this and then reports it. And I thought, well, isn't that very interesting? Nobody wants to run out there to see what it is. They don't want to see if it's a meteor. They don't want to see if it was a UFO. They're waiting for the hiker who goes up into wherever it is to discover it. And then, of course, then the report will go down the line, et cetera, et cetera. Very interesting way of looking at finding things in our world. Very interesting. All right. So that's interesting. I want to move now into, so I want to make it clear that Sunshine does do do missing persons cases or attempting like that, or objects. What other types of things do you do in regards to either true crime or missing stuff? What other things do you do?
I can find lost objects in somebody's house or wherever they've lost it. I used to have a really great client years ago who liked to go to the opera with his mother. And they're from a big Italian family. Wink, wink, get my drift.
Yeah.
And they would often ask me to find things for them, objects or money or sometimes people. And one time, the mother, Josephina, she'd been at the opera and she lost her diamond tennis bracelet. And this was like a disaster for her. It had been like one of the last gifts her husband had given her before he passed. And she was the classic Italian grieving widow with the wearing all black, very old school. And, you know, her son called me up and said, we need to find this tennis bracelet. Could you have any idea where it is? And I said, just give me a moment. And I focused myself, unfocused and focused myself into a little trance. Mm-hmm. And I saw that it was had fallen into the lining of her coat, just with a tiny tear in the coat. And they found it inside the coat, like immediately. So I'm good at that. And sometimes people will call for a missing pet, right? You know, often a cat, mostly cats, run away. And sometimes we don't know where they went. Did they get taken in by another family? Did they die, perhaps? And I had one particular case where a woman wanted desperately to find her cat, thought that someone had stolen it. Mm. She'd been consulting with another psychic, but that psychic would give her a bit of information every single week, basically milking her for money.
Oh.
You know, like the cat was just at, oh, the cat just ran across the road and I see someone took it in. It was at a vet, but I don't know what vet it was. And it's got two ouchies and now it's being taken care of there. And then the next week she would say, oh, it ran away from that location. And when I was doing dowsing, which I 100% trust my dowsing, I really do. It's pretty darn accurate. And I will look at a map often and kind of make an area. I'll use a pendulum and I'll also use my rods. And the cat, the dead cat, was able to tell me what street it had got hit by a car on. And so when I gave that information to the person who was looking for their cat, she got very quiet. And the next thing she said was, I don't believe. And I said, okay, well, just go to that location and see if you find your dead cat. She didn't want to have anything to do with me after that. She continued to talk to the psychic who was milking her every week for $100 a week. So if you do, there's 52 weeks in a year. So this woman wasted $5,200 on trying to locate a cat that was already dead. Mm. So sometimes I run into weird situations like that. I've also run into a situation where someone's looking for their son and I literally got a spirit in my house, a ghost in my house that looked very much like the son. And he's telling me where he's located. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh boy, this is bad. You know, I don't want to tell her that her son is dead, but I'm going to have to. So I gave a location of where I thought the dead son was. And I kept having a different name. And it turned out that these two people just looked very similar to mm-hmm. each other. And they found the person's wallet that was the ghost that came to me. They found his wallet in the near the location. But it turned out that the other person that was missing was actually in a rehab. Hmm. So here was a conflicting report, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, okay, well, how was I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm usually pretty accurate. When I'm not accurate, I'm always like, huh, what's going on here? Why was I not accurate? Because part of my training as a child was to be very accurate.
Yeah.
So this was a case where even the family that I had said, I think your son is dead, was really angry with me because he was really alive.
Yeah.
Okay. But this was a case where two people looked very similar to each other, and one was a ghost, came and told me where their body was, even after the people found the wallet. And I said, are you going to turn that into the police? They didn't turn it in. So then I called the police in that town and I said, there is a body, blah, blah, blah. First question, how do you know that? Why would you know that? And then the person that that was, you know, they found the wallet of, had been from a family with generational drug abuse, generational crime, generational poverty, and nobody cared to go find the body. Nobody cared to do it. So that's the reality of the world we're living in. Some people are more important than others, you know, and it's not in my eyes, but in the eyes of, quote, society.
Well, I'll never forget one of the final days when I was working in my the law firm I was working in, and my manager was talking about his cremated deceased father, who was in an urn and was in the basement of the mortuary place. And he came in, this is the manager, came into my office one day, and he said, yeah, I just got a phone call from the mortuary. And I said, yeah, what about? And he said, well, they want me to go over there and pick up my dead father, who's been sitting amongst probably about 40 to 50 cremated individuals in some type of an urn or a bag or whatever, sitting in the basement of the mortuary, where the family members literally didn't want either anything to do with them anymore, didn't know what to do with the ashes, but just basically refused to come and pick up these ashes. And that was an eye-opening moment.
Just in and of itself, because you never know if your family member is just going to leave you there. Well, all of Sunshine's information will be in the show notes, and please go and look her up and give her a call for a psychic reading, and just know that we really do appreciate everything she's done for us today. Thank you so much, Sunshine, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Kelly. It was my pleasure. Thank you.